The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
106 on WhatsApp because Pete the Vet, that being Pete Wedderburn, is with us. Pete, I apologise for the pun on the run-up that I saw your mocking.
The alliteration. That's really cool, Anton. Well done. Was that written down somewhere or did you just make it up as you went along?
I've been practising since Thursday. Now, there's a couple of questions in, as always, for you as soon as we mentioned that you are here. One of them is one that I haven't come across before, but I thought it was interesting. How can I become a puppy walker for guide dogs? This is because guide dogs get sort of fostered for a while, don't they?
They do. You see, obviously you can't just have a puppy going straight into the life of being guiding somebody around with poor vision. They have to be really well socialised and really well trained. So, and they don't start the specific training till they're adult dogs. What that means is that from 9 weeks of age to 14 months of age, they have to be living with a family, being really well socialised and getting excellent basic dog training. And so that work, and it is work, is done by volunteers. And that just means anybody out there who's listening to the show who decides they want to do it, they can apply. And what you do is you go to guidedogs.ie and you follow the links for becoming a puppy trainer. They have seminars, first of all. You have to apply, and they have certain restrictions. You know, for example, maybe you can't have children under the age of 5 years of age. Maybe you can't have more than two other dogs. Maybe, whatever. There's a list of parameters you have to comply with. And then after that, you can go to an online seminar, and if you still feel it works for you, then you apply, and maybe or maybe not you'll get the gig.
Is it not an awful wrench to have a dog, particularly at that formative stage with the dog where you build the relationship and then have to give it back?
Well, it's a job of work and a job of passion. So, you know, I don't think you're doing it for your own satisfaction. You're basically launching this dog into a life of its own. And so I think you would fall in love with a puppy. They are the most adorable creatures, and you would be sad at the end of it, but you'd have done a job well done. And you would learn a lot about dog behaviour because you get taught. There's a great support system there. They look after the costs of the food, the veterinary costs, and they also they have instructors teach you how to teach the dog. So it's, you know, for somebody with a passion for animals, if you've space in your life, then I think it's a great thing to do.
A lot of questions coming in about a selection of a first-time pet or a first-time dog. Is there a breed of dog that should never be considered as a pet?
Well, I don't really like this talk of breeds, you know, because people, I mean, dogs are dogs. They're the same species. What a breed is...
Well, now, Pete.
They're all the same species. They're just variations on a species.
Now, look, if so, I have
so,
spent...
So, Anton, which type of person, which breed of person should you never be friends with? Do you know what I mean? Like, they're variations on a scale. So some dogs clearly are very... Some breeds are strong, muscular, very active breeds. Some breeds are small, docile, weak breeds. And there's lots of variations in between them.
You would know, Pete, and there is no way around this. If you get a collie, it is like bringing home a Mensa candidate, and it's going to need constant interaction, training and exercise. If you bring home a bulldog, it's not going to be quite so demanding.
Okay, I'd rather use the expression types of dog than breeds because there's so much variation. But also, you have look at the range of homes. So, like when you say considered as a pet in what sort of home? With one person who's able to give 4 hours a day just to that animal, or in a busy family with four children and parents who are rather stretched already? So, you know, considered as a pet for what? So really, I'd see it much more as an individual decision. You know, for your specific circumstances, what would you consider as a pet? And I mean, the big...
Do you see people making bad choices? Do you see a type of dog or dog behaviour where you think you're going to have your hands full with your setting and that animal?
All the time. All the time. People make decisions on choosing a dog based on some kind of emotional busyness going around in their head. They want, you know, they want to... I don't know, maybe they're trying to create themselves as a certain type of image or a certain type of, you know, they see themselves in a certain way. And this particular dog fits that kind of an image. And people do often make mistakes, unfortunately. And as a kind of objective observer, as a vet, you observe this and you just have to help people through it. They don't mean to make these mistakes, but I'd say to anybody, it's a really, really important decision choosing the dog in the first place. And you should try to avoid just making it yourself or an impulse. You should really talk to somebody with experience of dogs and see what they suggest and follow their advice. Because often people who get dogs, they're coming from a place of a little bit of inexperience and ignorance. And I don't mean that in a cruel way. I just mean, you know, they haven't got experience and they haven't got knowledge. So speak to somebody who's got experience and knowledge and help them choose a dog type for your particular situation. And you're far less likely to make a mistake.
Interesting text saying, why has my dog started ignoring commands?
Well, that's your fault. Yeah, you're too boring and inconsistent, and your dog rightly is ignoring you. So basically, dogs are not stupid, and dogs do what suits them and what they like doing. And so if you're training your dog, you have to make yourself consistent, you have to focus on your dog, and you have to be interesting, and you have to give them rewards at exactly the right time. If you do that, your dog will not stop obeying your commands. It is about you more than it is about the dog.
Is it the case that you can never assume that a command is permanently inbuilt, that you should always be trying to find a way to incentivize the dog to do what you're telling it to do?
Definitely. Dogs, well, I mean, some things are so deeply ingrained that dogs do learn to do it almost automatically. Like one of the things I like doing as a vet, I mean, it's important to me that dogs like coming to the vet. And so, you know, you want to make the vet an enjoyable experience for an animal. And so we have a supply of treats all the time at reception in the consult room. And you don't like just to give a treat randomly. Your dog's got to do a little bit of something. So I'll often say, sit. And the number of dogs that actually do sit before they take the treat, I would say about 90%. It's so deeply ingrained. So yes, there is an element of both things going on there. But really, you should be...
Do you do the same with cats? Do cats get away with murder, Peter?
Cats are independent freeloaders, and I envy them.
Who?
I want to come back as a cat one day. A well looked after cat.
They can be trained, though. It is possible.
Of
but
of course, there are movie cats that do things on the movies. Of course they can be trained. I mean, it is about reward and, you know, for repetitive reward for repeated behaviours, and animals respond very well to that of all types.
I remember I had a cat once where I decided I was going to train it to walk on a lead, and after 2 days we established which of us was the alpha in the relationship.
You have to do it very carefully. Like they really enjoy their freedom. You can't just lash on a harness and say, off we go now for a 5 kilometer walk. You know, this is not going to happen.
One asking, if you are going to incentivize them with treats, what are good treats for training? Because presumably you don't want to load them up with calories if you're training them.
Well, I think for training, you need to use extra tasty treats as well. You know, you can't just give them a piece of their regular kibble and they just did breakfast and you got another little bit of breakfast to them. You know, that's not really going to captivate them. So what I used to do is to boil some sausages. And when they were cold, I would just chop them into little sections of like half a centimeter and put them in one of those, you know, a bag that had a little bit of a crinkly noise in my pocket. And really, very quickly, all I had to do was crinkle the bag and my dog would be
Pavlovian.
doing everything. He'd go through every command he'd ever learned in front of me because he knew there was a treat coming up. He was sitting, he was staying, he was rolling over. Just give me that food, you know. So you want something that the dog really likes so that they are going to respond very well to that.
Can I ask you a thing that I've always been intrigued by and I've never been able to get to a full understanding of it? I had a dog at one point where I was doing command training with it. And what I discovered was when I in my head picked what I was next going to tell it to do, it would do it.
No.
Yeah, so I would decide, okay, I would not verbalize or do anything. I just choose the command and the dog would do it in front of me thinking, what is the tell that I'm giving off?
Well, I mean, the first possibility, which is the most fascinating one, is that your dog is reading your mind. And who knows?
He wasn't that bright.
Like there's a book written, Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Going to Get Back From Work. I can't remember the name of the title, something like that. This guy, Rupert, somebody's written this book. He's a psychologist, neuro researcher, whatever. And he reckons that dogs are somehow able to pick up in the ether the fact that the owner has left work and is going to come home soon. And, you know, people tell these stories about dogs that wake up from their sleep and they get up and they walk to the window and they look out and 5 minutes later the owner's there. How do they know that? So, okay, I don't really believe this, Anton. I think it's a lovely story. I think it's much more likely that in some way your body language is telling your dog what you want next. And, you know, I can't really explain that, but
when you look at the dogs that can do, when the support dogs that can see seizures coming on in owners,
yeah,
like they pick up on the tiniest invisible cues and smells.
But that's it, you see. And we think that they're responding to our verbal command, but whenever we make a verbal command, we also put our body in a certain way. And so it's quite possible that before you said anything, you were already thinking, I'm going to ask them to lie down now. And you were in some way moving your arms or hands in such a way.
Who knows? Amazing, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
I have a collie that pulls constantly on the lead. Have you any advice? That can be that's a challenging one to train out, isn't it?
It really is. And I think it's about consistency and it's about never letting your dog away with it. Never. So you're only, basically the idea is that the leash should simply be away. Leash and harness should really be for emergencies only, and your dog should be walking beside you anyway, because they want to. But that takes an awful lot of training. And the problem is you can have this great training theory and practice, and then one day you're really busy because you're late for work and you just go out and you say, feck all that training, we're just going to go for a walk, and your dog's pulling you, say, I don't mind this one time. But in doing that, you undo all of the hard work.
Oh, do you? Oh, it can be undone that quick.
Oh, they learn. Because, I mean, if a dog is interested in going for a walk and excited about what's ahead of them, of course they're going to pull and lead, because they just want to charge ahead. And so, it's not an easy one, but it is down to basic training and repetitive and never doing it any other way, having very strict boundaries. It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. And it depends on the dog too.
Quick one before I let you go. My cat had a very bad reaction on his skin to a flea and tick repellent drop products. Are there alternatives for flea and tick treatment that aren't the drops in the back of the neck?
There are indeed. You can give tablets that go into the food or over the animal's throat. The top quality flea products are the best ones, the most effective ones. They are prescription only, which can be frustrating for an owner because it means you have to go to the vet to get them. And if you're not registered with the vet, then you can't get them. You have to go to the vet to get registered with the vet, have a consultation. Vets can only prescribe these medications for animals that are under their care. And under their care means they have to see them at least once a year. It's just that there are controls on these drugs, because if they're used wrongly, they can cause problems. So they have to be used for the right animal, for the right body weight and all that sort of stuff.
Pete, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.